Hello.
All right. Davis versus the U.S. And it is Appeal 14-3019. Mr. Duke. Hello, Mr. Duke. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Okay, good morning. May it please the court, and again, good morning. My name is Brandon Duke for the appellant, Calvin Davis, who asserts that...
Could you raise your voice a little bit?
Yes, sorry. I'm Brandon Duke for the appellant, Calvin Davis, who asserts that the district court's summary denial of his 2255 motion as untimely should be reversed. Mr. Davis was a minor player in a drug trafficking organization, which Mr. Davis ultimately assisted the government in investigating as a confidential informant. He entered a plea for his role, which carried a prison term that he understood would be about 80 months or about 6 to 7 years, based on his cooperation. Prior to his sentencing, Mr. Davis was not made aware by counsel that his ultimate sentence could actually be up to 14, more than 14 years. The reason for the dramatic difference in his sentence was the guideline calculation in the PSR, which included increases both for prior criminal history and for allegedly providing the USPO with false information. The latter resulted in two additional points to his offense level, and was based on confusion over Mr. Davis's service record and his military discharges. If Mr. Davis, during this process, we assert, did not provide false information to the USPO. As explained in our briefs, he served two tours in the Army and was honorably discharged during the first and received a bad conduct discharge as a result of a court-martial during the second. Mr. Davis did not attempt to hide his military record as found in the PSR and by the district court judge in the underlying case at sentencing. And in fact, he provided a release to the USPO to give full access to his military records.
Now, any sentencing errors would be barred by the waiver in the plea agreement, would they not? Assuming, of course, there's no reason to set aside the waiver.
That's correct, but as these facts that I've just attempted to lay out, I think, go to ineffective assistance of counsel in negotiating the whole, it is with respect to the plea agreement as a whole, which is one of the exceptions to enforceability of a
I mean, in other words, you say that Davis was misinformed to the consequences of his guilty plea and the length of the sentence he might receive, but is that an allegation of ineffectiveness in the negotiation of the plea agreement?
I think it goes to the plea agreement as a whole because Mr. Davis was not able to make an informed decision as to waiving his right to an appeal when he clearly did not understand the effect of pleading.
Well, what was he asked at the plea colloquy about the waiver and the potential length of the sentence?
I don't have that in the record before me, but... Hmm. I assume he was asked as part of a general plea colloquy, but again, I think he was the record that we have and the facts that he's asserted have clearly indicated that both up until sentencing and after the sentence was imposed, until that point, he was never aware that he could receive a sentence anywhere near 14 years.
So there's no transcript of that? Is that what you're
saying?
There
is a transcript. I just don't have it with me. Sorry.
You don't have it with you and you haven't looked at it?
No.
Okay. You can go ahead.
And again, as I said, the facts with respect to his ineffective assistance of counsel show that existed both with respect to the plea agreement and... his counsel's effectiveness during the sentencing process. Specifically, as to the process, Mr. Davis his counsel failed to notify him of a meeting with the USPO to resolve the confusion over his military record, and his counsel's admitted failure to advise Mr. Davis of that meeting is clearly another instance of his ineffectiveness in advance of the plea hearing, or in advance of entering the plea. And again, I say that goes to the waiver, which we just discussed. And in fact, following the sentence, Mr. Davis specifically requested a direct appeal be filed, and his counsel just either, it's not clear what happened, but his counsel never filed a notice of appeal in the case, despite Mr. Davis's request to do so. And I think that both goes towards ineffectiveness, which this court has said is per se ineffectiveness of counsel when a client has asked for a notice of appeal to be filed. But it also goes to his knowledge and awareness of the effect of the plea, because he was not made aware that he had waived that right.
So now the plea agreement pretty carefully spells out his appellate and collateral rights.
I agree. The waiver is very specific and broad in covering both his appellate and collateral rights. But as to what Mr. Davis was made aware of by his counsel during the plea process, I think it's clear that the record and the facts show that he didn't understand that, and he's not a lawyer. And his lawyer's duty was to advise him of what he was waiving, and I believe the record indicates that that wasn't done here. And initially, we think both this disparity between the sentence that the government agreed to in the plea agreement and the actual sentences that resulted, and the mistaken inclusion of the increase for his obstruction, or his alleged obstruction, which the government also supported at sentencing, compels consideration of the interests of justice in this case. But more specifically, as to the issues raised by the court, as a result of the Supreme Court decision in Allain, Mr. Davis' motion, and including his ineffective assistance claims, should be considered timely.
But Allain is not retroactive on collateral review, right?
This court has said that very recently, and we agree that generally that's what this court's holding is. However, here where counsel's, we think, again, his ineffective assistance of counsel affects Mr. Davis's position with respect to the collateral.
So Davis's mandatory minimum wasn't increased here based on any finding of facts at the sentencing, was it?
That's correct, but we believe that the holding or the principle, one principle raised, or the principle identified in Allain, is that the principle identified in Allain is that the crime should match the punishment, and that there should be transparency between the crime and the punishment, and that facts that increase the punishment from the floor for a certain crime must be found by a jury. And here, Mr. Davis, because of his counsel's representation and advice of counsel, believed the floor to be 6 years, which was his likely sentence under the plea. But because of his failure to be informed of that, both because of the findings of the PCR and its inclusion of two additional points, that amount increased at least to 10 years because of his criminal history that was included, which removed the ability to reduce the ability of the court to reduce the mandatory minimum below by 33%, which would have been 6 years. So that raised the floor. And then also an additional 2 or 3 years because of his alleged obstruction, which we believe is a colorable claim under Allain.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm Mr. Fullerton, coming up.
Good morning. May it please the court. This was a cooperation plea, and Mr. Davis was an 11C1C deal to 66% of the low end. There was a paragraph in the plea that said, you know, the parties anticipate that the range would be 108 to 135, but there was, that range might change, and obviously it's up to the district court to make a final determination what the range is, but the government would move, based on his continued cooperation, for a reduction to 66% of the low end, or 66% of the statutory mandatory minimum of 10 years, whichever was higher. The government did that. In return for these undertakings by the government, the defendant pleaded guilty and waived his right to appeal and waived his right to bring a 2255 motion. That waiver should be enforced. To attack the waiver is to attack the plea deal.
Could his claim of being misadvised as to the consequences of his guilty plea and the length of the sentence he might receive be considered a claim going to the voluntariness of the plea and thus not barred by the waiver?
Yeah, perhaps, Your Honor, perhaps. And perhaps he wants to get out of the cooperation deal and go back to the status quo ante, where he's facing a guideline range of...
yeah, a lot.
262 to 327 months. Perhaps he had a valid ineffective assistance of counsel claim. However, he had 1 year after his sentence and judgment became final in October of 2010, within which to bring that claim. He didn't bring any claim until more than 3.5 years after the judgment became final in May of 2014.
Yeah, well, you know, he thinks he may have an Elaine claim.
So. Well, he doesn't have an Elaine claim. And even if he did have an Elaine claim, every other claim that was appended to a claim under Elaine would have to be timely on its own. Right? And that's the court asked the parties to address that question in its order granting a certificate of appealability. Yeah. And as we've pointed out in our brief, every circuit to have addressed this issue of whether claims in a 2255, whether they're timely, is addressed on a claim-by-claim basis or on the theory that one timely claim makes every other claim timely, has rejected the latter theory and has gone with the claim-by-claim analysis. So even if he did have an Elaine claim, and he doesn't because his mandatory minimum did not was not increased by anything the district court did at sentencing. Even if he did have such a claim, every other claim, including a claim that his attorney didn't file a notice of appeal or his attorney was ineffective for negotiating this cooperation deal with the government, would have to be timely on its own, and none of them are.
With respect to the transcript of the guilty plea, have you taken a look at it?
I have not seen that, no, Your Honor.
Okay.
There are other factual claims made by the defendant that I could address, but for example, the claim that he did not lie about his discharge from the Army. The probation officer in the PSR reported, the report was not that the defendant was asked whether he had received a dishonorable discharge, and thus the defendant's claim, no, I didn't receive a dishonorable discharge, was not technically false. The PSR stated that the defendant reported to the probation officer, in the company of his attorney, that he had in fact received an honorable discharge. And of course he hadn't. He also denied receiving any disciplinary action while in the Army, and of course he had been in the brig for 30 months for bigamy, fraudulent enlistment in the Army, and so on. He had a significant criminal record while in the Army. So if the court has no more questions, we just ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you.
As to the claim by claim, position, we agree that the general rule for most of the for every circuit that's addressed it and the cases here is that individual claims generally are claim by claim. However, I think that it has been applied because, and it makes sense for old, unrelated, and baseless claims. But here, we believe that his ineffective assistance counsel claim is directly related, and is the merits are intertwined with his Elaine claim, and therefore, in that case, we believe that the claim should be analyzed on the merits together. We don't believe a broad rule is necessary here, and that's not what we're advocating for. Simply just with respect to those claims. Thank you.
And he understands, should we agree with him, that he would, the plea could be voided, and then he could face that substantial amount of time. That's been discussed with him?
We've definitely discussed that issue with him, but just to clarify here, we think the best remedy would be enforcement of the plea in line with his expectations, and at minimum, removing the mistaken factual increases resulting from the alleged obstruction charges, which are significant. It's two of the 3 years under the guidelines.
Thank you, Mr. Duke. And you were appointed by the court, so you have the thanks of the court for taking the case on and helping your client.
Thank you.
So thank you very much. And as always, thank you to the government. And the case will be taken under advisement.